I don't think I am.
Everybody says that you're quieter on the podcast. Like,
it's because I talk too fast. They don't understand. Their brain doesn't keep up. Riding through the city on my bike all day because the filth took away my license. It doesn't get me down and I feel okay because the sights that I'm seeing are priceless. Everything seems to look as it should, but I wonder what goes on behind doors. Hello and welcome to this month's episode of the Portland Afoot Commuting Podcast about buses, bikes, and low-car life in PDX. I'm Lillian, your producer. And I'm Michael, Portland Afoot's editor. Each month, Lily and I bring you three bits of practical news that matter to Portlanders who get around without a car.
And we give it to you in the time that it takes the average Portlander to get to work. This month we're talking about eating in the street, if it's possible to be too bad of a driver to be mayor, and how to get free pizza and beer for riding your bike to work.
And today we are joined by nobody. Is that right? Is that right, Lily?
Yep, just you and me this month. All back right. To basic.
And we're also going to share some of our favorite Twitter chatter about TriMet, and I'll read a funny story that I heard happened on the bus.
Enjoy listening. When a kid came along to offer a hand, but before she had time to accept it, hits her over the head, doesn't care if she's dead, cause he's got all her jewelry and wallet.
Alright, so we are going to talk about this new program that the city has come up with for helping there be more street cafes in Portland.
So I was just down in San Francisco last week, and I was pretty much the entire first day I was there, all I did was go from parklet to parklet, which are these beautiful... I didn't know that San Francisco had launched these to such great success, but they essentially allow you to... Right now we have the on-street bike parking, where you can take back... what would be metered parking space, and instead...
For an automobile. So you take out the car parking.
Take out the car parking and turn into bike parking.
Right.
But this is, like, upgrading it. So it's just even more usable by creating these, like, really great little on-street cafes right in front of businesses. And there's a whole variety of them. Like, you can just walk down Valencia Street in the Mission, and it's just like hopping from parklet to parklet. You know, one of them is like a little park that has like a Triceratops topiary in it.
I saw that on the internet.
There's one of the more, because it's San Francisco, the coffee shops, of course, are very, very abundant and have very long lines, because as far as I can tell, San Francisco loves waiting in lines. There's a Tumblr devoted to it. And one of them has vertical bike parking integrated into the parklet that also has, like, bars that you can sit at.
That's super cool.
It's really cool. And they're really well done. They're not... I guess one of my big complaints with the Southwest Ankeny project when it was first launched...
This is the street that's right downtown by the Saturday market that they closed down the street and put in tables right down the middle.
Because it was a street that was, you know, a one-way, going between a one-way and a one-way. It was not a very useful, and it was a one-block street. I felt like one of the biggest failings of that project was it failed to... from the beginning be this really gorgeous, aesthetically pleasing place. And all of these installations on the parklets in San Francisco, you can tell a lot of care and expense has gone into making these really gorgeous places. But so, what's interesting...
You know what we've done?
What have we done?
We buried the lead. The news of this is that a couple weeks ago, Portland Transport reported that the City of Portland Bureau of Transportation is going to let business owners put these in front of their lots for, it's like $460 plus a monthly payment for lost meter revenue.
Do we know how much lost meter revenue
the city doesn't say that either. I think it varies.
It depends by the spot.
And they've got one that's installed so far on Division and 31st.
Thai Place on Division,
So it's free parking there, so...
They just pay
the setup costs. And that's how it is in San Francisco, too, actually. But the difference is that, unlike in San Francisco and Mountain View and New York, I think, these are not parklets. They're called street seats, and they're private space. So instead of being public space, where you can go, anybody can walk into a San Francisco parklet and just hang out. You don't have to be a patron of the cafe.
Right, and there's notices on all of the parklets to point that out. Most of them feel like an extension of the business, and they very much have that feel, partially just because the way they're designed is sort of ties in with the theme of the business. But there are little notices that say this is a public space available for use for anyone.
So what were you going to say about it? I'm sorry.
That was mostly what I was going to say. Oh, okay. I think I think was really interesting about it is they really did feel like this extension of private space, but they were, it was really just raising the public space to the standard of private space because you were able to go there no matter what and just hang out. Hmm. But it didn't have the feeling of,
that's like, a really interesting way to put it.
Like a, you know, it wasn't a piss-ridden park or something in the middle right. of nowhere. And I think one of the differences is that San Francisco, it's just so much more dense than Portland. I never really feel a lack of public space in Portland because it's never very far.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Even downtown, I feel like we're not lacking it.
Right, right, right. That's interesting. I guess San Francisco's got, it's really more of a hybrid in San Francisco. Here, it's really just extra seating. And that's what it was on Southwest Ankeny, the street. So I actually went down to Southwest Ankeny and talked to Dustin Knox the other night, who owns the Bar Central and was sort of the mastermind behind the closure of that street. And he said it's been going fantastic. He's been able to, his seating has increased by about a third. A lot of the restaurants have done the same thing. He says it's bringing a lot of extra revenue. It's not like it's a ton of extra profit, but it means that they can be open for much longer. And next year they're going to switch to lunch, and he thinks that's going to be a huge way to increase the business of these,
especially downtown. Yeah,
exactly. He says every single night you have 200 people sitting outside having a dinner and a beer. I think it's becoming a focal point of the city that no one's really realized yet. I think that's totally true. I think that that space has slowly gotten funkier and funkier from that initial sort of Walmartization. That there's a neon sign there for the coffee shop now, and there are like bushes, and they're going to tear out, apparently they're going to put in chains and like stanchions, metal stanchions, in the next few months, and so it's going to really become a sort of more permanent, funky space.
I feel like a lot of my problems with the space are unfortunately beyond the business's ability or the city's ability. It's because it's Oregon Liquor Control Commission problems. Because at the moment, you can't pass freely through the space because it's chained off. So if you're under 21, you have to like go around the whole block.
We've been talking a lot about it. Why do you think this actually matters to low car life? Do you think it, like, what is the effect on San Francisco of having this parklets to hop among? How does it change the place?
I think it changes the feel of the street to be more open, but I don't necessarily feel like, as like a commuter, I don't feel like it would influence you that much. Although a few of them are places where people wait for the bus, which is pretty rad.
Hmm. Nice.
But I feel like the openness of the street is a really important factor there, because there's really high foot traffic on the streets, especially in Valencia and San Francisco, mm-hmm. but it can feel very much like you're just passing from business to business. Mm-hmm. And with the parklets, it didn't feel that way. It felt like you could really just hang out for a while on the street. And you can, I mean, it's a crazy loud street, but I still, like, you know, like everyone else in San Francisco, got on my iPhone and was like making an insurance call for 45 minutes while hanging out on the street, drinking my overpriced coffee. It was great.
Right. Yeah, so I feel like it contributes to the whole sense that we have that we're, I was recently in Ohio and was thinking how blessed we are to have a downtown that people, you can see human beings in, and it just increases that. And every time you see a human being, I think it improves your life, basically.
That's, well, you know, the reason that we have a MAX, that we have a light rail above ground instead of having a subway in Portland was a very intentional choice to have people on the street.
It was a very intentional choice not to spend
three times as much money. Part of it was an intentional streetscape thing.
I don't buy it.
They thought about doing an elevated line as well, which actually wouldn't have been that much more cost than the light rail.
Really?
Yeah. And the reason that they chose to do it is because they wanted to have it be integrated with the street and to bring people to the street level. Hmm. And so there's been like a history of intentional choices around that in Portland.
Right.
Unfortunately, now that means that we can only have two cars on every MAX because we have it at street level.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, right. The last thing I want to say is if you see the photos or if you've seen the thing on Division, it really looks like it's sort of like a thumb sticking out on Division, which is sort of a high-volume street. They're about to redo it, but I was talking to Dustin, said this, and several other people said this when they saw the photos, that like that does not look like it, a safe place to sit. My favorite comment on this, however, was in response to people worried about cars careening off the street into this parklet. Somebody said on Bike Portland, a fellow named Dan said, if diners aren't responsible enough to wear helmets, they really can't complain if they get hit by a car.
It's pretty great.
I thought that summed it up.
Have you ever read there's a really great blog that is about houses needing protection and helmets, which is, it's a blog entirely devoted to cars crashing into houses.
No building is safe?
Yeah, yeah. No Building is Safe. Is that the name of it?
Well, there's one. There's a Tumblr. No Building is Safe.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my God, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. But I feel like it hits on the same thing, which is like, if you can't, if nothing can be, even buildings can't be safe in public space, like how can we expect to put people on the streets?
Yes,
which is, you know.
Yeah.
Cars.
Well, I think cars.
The tyranny of cars.
Let's move along. If there's anybody who needs to be freed from the tyranny of cars, it is a fellow who's running for mayor, Mr. Jefferson Smith. Well, this is something that had been on the public record for a while.
It had, well, and it was around,
mm-hmm.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So BoJack had reported it a long time ago, apparently, this local blogger who hates Jefferson Smith. And recently, possibly because of the opposing campaign, it landed in the Oregonian anew. And there was a public record request about it. Anyway, so they...
So the Mercury... By the way, Mercury talked about this before the primary.
Yeah, yeah. I think there was certainly some coverage of it. And the... So here's what happened. This is a fellow who's running for mayor.
Jefferson Smith.
Yes. And he's got... He released his full driving record in response to the Oregonian public record requests. So the highlights we found out, he's got his license has been suspended 7 times, all of them for failing to appear at a hearing or pay a fine after such violations as speeding, 95 and a 55, 80 and a 65, failure to yield to an emergency vehicle, failure to carry proof of insurance, and some of those suspensions were also due to several violations in a row. 3 more suspensions that were rescinded after he got with the program. Many of those were from the 1990s when he was like the 95 and 55, he was only 20. And, but his most recent moving violation was 40 and a 25 in 2009. Dude has a terrible, terrible driving record. Yeah. He admits it. He's upfront about it. And he has continued to offend at least until 2009. So I've got 3 questions. I'll start with one. Should this matter to the election? Do we care if our mayor can't drive very well? What's reasonable is to expect somebody to like get with the program after they've got a problem and solve the problem about themselves. And I don't think that this would be as big of a problem if Jefferson weren't already bad at keeping track of other stuff. It seems like, right. You know, the tax records for the bus project, the nonprofit he ran, have often been messed up, and I totally identify with this, but it's a bad sign. So what would the other argument here, I think, that I've heard on that particular thing is he's never had an executive assistant. He would not be a good person to hire as one's executive assistant. We're not hiring an executive assistant. In fact, the mayor's office does provide executive assistant. Would be his first chance to function as doing what he does well, which is, you know, being a leader, supposedly.
And organizing things.
And right, exactly. Yeah, and he
without having to organize paperwork.
Right. He's a brilliant, talented, and inspiring dude, but his act is not fully together.
Abysmal.
Right.
Driving-wise.
Next question. Will this matter to the election?
I think it does already matter to the election. So, when the Mercury wrote about this before the primary, that was back when they were sort of tongue-in-cheek looking at all the candidates, all 3 candidates, and just, like, they all kind of suck in a lot of ways. And the main one with Jefferson Smith, and the reason that they didn't really endorse him was because they were like, he kind of doesn't know how to drive. It's kind of a problem.
Right. Yeah, so so it does matter, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think it does matter. I mean, I think if it matters this much in terms of the media coverage of it, it does matter.
Right.
Because I think it's already putting a lot of doubt in, because now, you know, now his opponent is looking like the old guy who has his shit together, which was not the way that Jefferson Smith wanted things to look.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. One last thing I wanted to ask about on this was a really interesting discussion between our friends Benjamin and Steve on Twitter about how we could change policy for this. What if we could say that, you know, people with terrible driving records, maybe that includes Smith, their license should be taken away. Maybe they have lost the privilege of driving. And so the discussion with this was really interesting. Like, often the way that somebody gets these suspensions and violations is by not having insurance. And there are lots of poor people who don't have insurance or, you know, don't have lots of things going on. There are lots of people of all sorts who don't have insurance coverage, including Smith for a while. And Steve was saying, if we make it easier for people to get insurance, then it becomes less of a problem to require people to have it, and we can lower the standard for taking licenses away. So it's we'll be more comfortable enforcing insurance if you could get insurance while you were at the DMV. If you were required to buy insurance while you were at the DMV, if you were required to stop into the DMV to get insurance renewals, that sort of thing, or for license renewals, et cetera. Or if you could buy insurance at the pump. That was Benjamin's brilliant idea, I thought.
Brilliant, but very challenging.
Yes.
If we can't even get a mileage tax at the pump, I do not think insurance is in the future. I mean, here's the thing, is that we are completely willing to take away driver's license for things like medical problems.
That's true.
I mean, if you are epileptic, even if you've never had a situation where you've had a moving violation, or
I didn't know that.
Or if you have a cardiac defibrillator,
right.
You know, any of these things, we've just decided, oh, you might be dangerous in the future, so you can't have a driver's license. Whereas, if you've had tons of moving violations and have proved you're dangerous on the road,
mm-hmm.
we still fail to take your driver's license away.
Right.
So, I mean, what is this a case of, like, we're hedging our bets because we've decided that, you know, if someone has a seizure when they're driving, that would be very, very bad. But someone who has a record of going 95 over 50, 95 in a 55 zone,
mm-hmm.
doesn't get their driver's license taken away. I mean, what does that say about our priorities?
All I know is I really want people to be able to buy insurance at the gas pump.
It's not going to happen.
All right. Well, moving on. Speaking of things.
That is not a market that is able to be put in.
Topic 3. Moving on to the Bike Commute Challenge.
The Bike Commute Challenge is coming up in September, and it's for all of Oregon.
What is the Bike Commute Challenge, Julian?
It is an annual competition that uses friendly competition to inspire people to ride to work.
Mm.
And sort of the main goal of the program is to get people to start riding that don't normally ride.
Ride their bikes to work.
Ride their bikes to work. And it is a workplace-based competition, so every workplace has a team that they compete with. Most workplaces at this point probably do have a team if you work in Portland, but if not, you can be the team captain and get other people at your workplace to participate. It's great. Full disclosure, I worked for the Bike Commute Challenge for 3 years, so I'm,
An expert,
and slightly biased because I think it's a really great program.
Why is that?
It's a really great program because it creates like 2,000 new bike commuters in Oregon every year.
Does it?
Yeah. People that say that they have never bike commuted,
mm-hmm.
That then bike commute at least once during the month of September.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have people that come back the next year that previously identified as a new biker, but then don't identify as a new biker anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it definitely creates long-term bike commuters.
Okay.
It's like
if you've never gotten around to biking, this is just the month to try it out, and then once you try it, yeah. you'll be like, oh, this is how I do it. Oh,
yeah. yeah, well, and we also, the Bicycle Transportation Alliance will come and teach a free bike commuting workshop in your workplace during lunchtime, so if you're, like, interested, but you're curious about how you deal with your hair, helmet hair, or, like, not smell when you get to work, or how you carry things on your bikes, or just how to plan your route, the BTA comes and teaches like a little hour-long lunchtime workshop during the month of September. And during the rest of the year, they cost money, but during August and September, it's free to get them. So.
Nice. I did this for the first time last year for my other gig at Mercy Corps, and I did not like it.
Why didn't you like it?
I love the bus and the train. But I didn't like not getting to read. I didn't like not getting to do my crossword. I also felt physically energized the entire month. I felt like I understood bicycling better. I had not realized how easy it was to get to work by bike, that it's almost exactly the same amount of transit time, travel time as the train and the car for that matter. And but I was still overjoyed when September ended. And I did actually, I was also worried about the rain. It hadn't really occurred to me that, like, how nice September is. I had not realized until last year that September is really part of summer here. And
yeah.
I looked at the numbers. So September gets 1.54 inches of rain on average in Portland. That's 70% more than August and almost three times as much as the average in July. But it's less than half of October.
Hopefully less than this July, though.
Yeah. Was it this
rain?
July,
yes.
I didn't think that at all. I people are so whiners.
People are whiners about weather no matter where you live.
That's true. Anyway, it's, yeah, the weather's not so bad.
No, well, so Bike to Work Month is actually in May for the nation, and we just ignore it in Portland. We're like, we're like, no, we're not going to get anybody new to bike to work in May in Portland because it's terrible, terrible weather. So we do like, the city does like one breakfast in May that's like, bike to work, okay, here, come have breakfast. And then the big thing is in September.
Right.
So part of what we do as a city is we actually do our counts on the bridges in September, and there's definitely an increase in bike traffic during September.
Sneaky. The other thing is we promised our listeners pizza and beer, I believe.
Yes.
So how can I obtain pizza and beer just for riding my bike? Or for...
So if you're in Portland and you're in part of the Bike Commute Challenge, even if you only ride once during the entire month, you get to come to a big free party that happens usually beginning of October, where the winners are announced, because there's winners for each category and size, and competition gets pretty heated between some of them, especially the one- and two-person workplaces. They really fight it out. But no matter if you want or not, you get pizza and beer at this big party at the end. I do not know, I don't think they've announced where the party's going to be yet, but if you sign up at bikecommutechallenge.com, you will find out when the party is.
Bikecommutechallenge.com. All right.
You could have seen Michael's face.
Are we done with that?
I think we're done with that.
I'm going to tell my low car tip of the month. You ready?
Yes.
Here it is. It's a car sharing tip. Zipcar and Car2Go insurance coverage applies to the renter of the vehicle, not the car. So if you're a Zipcar or Car2Go member, you cannot legally drive... If you're not a Zipcar or Car2Go member, you can't legally drive a Zipcar or Car2Go. If, like, if you're going with your friend to the coast or whatever, even if you're insured on your own car's insurance, you shouldn't be driving the shared vehicle. But here's the tip. If you are a member, then you're allowed to take a turn behind the wheel of either a Zipcar or a Car2Go, even if you're not the one who rented it.
What? I never knew that.
That's true. So you don't. The person who rents the Zipcar for the group isn't responsible for driving it the whole way, as long as the other people are Zipsters.
Oh my God, that's so awesome. Wow. Best transit tip ever.
All right.
I have to find an excuse to drive a car because I got a bunch of free Zipcar miles. I have no idea what to do with it.
Awesome.
I don't have a need.
Do you have a driver's license?
I do actually have a driver's license.
Closely held secret.
I've driven once since I took my driving test.
All right. Well, I will not be in Lily's Zipcar.
The one time I drove was actually to carry free pizza and beer to the Bike Commute Challenge party.
That's great. You've got some favorite TriMet tweets? The Twitterverse? What are they saying?
Yeah, so, you know, it gets increasingly harder these days to find the positive tweets with the TriMet hashtag on Twitter, but I have a few that I liked, whether or not they're positive. Dr. Jeff says... Oh yes, take off those shoes and put those end of the workday feet up on the seat. It's the most sanitary choice, obviously. Dude Luna says, "This woman on the bus has the face of someone who really, really dislikes taking the bus." Dr. Jeff says, "Sitting next to the Michael Phelps of body odor."
That's very beautiful.
Yeah. And Anzadusa says, "Feels like music should be playing on TriMet buses. So awkwardly quiet. Like daddy hit mommy at the dinner table and everyone else is trying to eat."
That is disturbing and brilliant.
It is pretty disturbing.
I love it. I'm going to tell the only on the bus story. This is an oldie, actually. It's a classic. It's from Jolie, riding TriMet number 75. "I was at 39th and Taylor, Jolie says, with my usual bus bag, my knitting and stuff. When the 75 pulled up across the street, I realized I was going to miss the bus. But then there was a break in traffic, and the teenager next to me, probably 17 or so, was like, 'Come on!' We bolted across. I just followed him. He obviously knew what he was doing. 'I'll catch him at the next stop,' he said. He ran ahead to Belmont. I was a half block behind. He stood there and kind of looked like he was going to get on. I ran up, and he bowed, and he made like this grand gesture. He wasn't getting on. He'd gone to all that trouble just for me. I was so grateful as I got on. The lady across the aisle made eye contact, and I smiled at her. Oh, my. My husband says I have 'crazy person, talk to me,' written across my forehead. I've seen her around. Large lady with glasses and dreadlocks. I think I just caught her on a bad day. 'What you smiling at?' she said. 'If you go and smile at me, then you better tell me a joke.' I had just had this really great experience with this kid. I was like, 'Okay, let's do this.' I said, why did the tofu cross the road? She crossed her arms. I don't know why. He wanted to prove he wasn't chicken, said with a big smile. I am a notoriously bad joke teller. Long pause. That ain't funny, she said. That's stupid. I was like, I came up with a joke on demand in front of all these people. Really? I didn't say that, I thought that. That time of day, there are a few construction guys that head up past Killingsworth. This gruff voice piped up. Oh, I thought that was funny. Then the driver. I thought it was funny, too. I see her occasionally at Fred Meyer. I don't think she recognizes me, but now I just try to duck. I would totally do it again. If you were to ask me to come up with a joke on the spot, I would probably come up with that same one. I have a very limited repertoire.
That was good.
It's one of my favorites.
Okay, that's our show. You can subscribe to the show at pdx.be/podcast. And send us any comments you have at podcast@portlandafoot.org.
You can spread the word about the show by searching for Portland Afoot on iTunes and leaving a review. And you can sign up for our forthcoming mobile phone magazine at portlandafoot.org.
You can follow me at Anomalily on Twitter.
And you can follow Portland Afoot on Twitter and Facebook, too. I'm Michael Anderson, your editor.
And I'm Lillian Kerbake, your producer. Thanks for listening, and remember to exit through the back.
Pass on the left.
And don't forget to thank your bus driver.